This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Fast food giant McDonald's has just experienced one of their worst years in decades, resulting in the ouster of two-year CEO Don Thompson. The new CEO, Steve Easterbrook, has started to salvage the company's reputation in the face of scandals in Asia, competition with fast casual cuisine, and more successful fast food chains.
Our business model strength is enduring, but no business or brand has a divine right to succeed. And the reality is our recent performance has been poor. The numbers don't lie, which is why, as we celebrate 60 years of McDonald's, I will not shy away from the urgent need to reset this business.
It might be easy to say that the nutritional content of fast food might be the reason for this downturn, but it's just part of the issue. The perception of a McDonald's meal is running into stiff competition from newcomers who've got an image that doesn't conjure junk food quite as easily. Shake Shack, for instance, is just as bad for you, but their public image is a lot more polished right now. Chipotle? Yeah, those burritos pack a lot of calories too, but there's not the stigma surrounding them the stop at Mickey D's has. Now, to be fair, the Golden Arches still holds a commanding lead in the fight for fast food dollars, but are we seeing a change in the way we eat that might mean a demise for the traditional fast food franchise? Join us with your thoughts and questions, 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. You can comment on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Have your ideas about what's good in fast food changed over the years? We'd love to hear from you. We're tackling the issue of junk food along with the Colin McEnroe Show today. They will be considering soda, something I used to call pop growing up back in Pittsburgh. The sugary beverages that used to be a staple drink are quickly falling into disfavor as evidence builds that they're the cause of our obesity epidemic. Again, join the Colin McEnroe Show at 1 o'clock this afternoon as we continue our look into junk food. Today we're talking with Marlene Schwartz. She's director of the Yukon Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity. She joins us in studio today. Marlene, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's great to be here.
So we're hopefully going to be talking with an industry analyst who will give us a little bit more detail on what's really happening in the fast food industry right now. As I said in the introduction, it's not like McDonald's is going away. They still hold this commanding lead in the number of fast food dollars spent. But there does seem to be a change there. From where you sit as someone who studies obesity and the things that we eat and how good those things are for us, what are the trends you're seeing right now?
Well, I think that one issue is that parents are starting to pay closer attention to what is being marketed to their children. And I think a company like McDonald's has really built its brand by marketing its products to very young children. And now that we know that young kids are not eating the healthiest diets, I think parents are starting to question, why are you pushing things like French fries and milkshakes on young kids if that's not what they should be eating?
We're going to be talking about kids and fast food in just a little bit and some more studies about how some of these fast food franchises market to kids. But let's just talk about the health quality of some of these meals. I mean, McDonald's, for example, but also Burger King and the other fast food chains have really been beat up in the press a lot over the course of the last couple of years. A lot of whether it's documentaries that show just the way their products are made or newspaper articles about just how many calories some of these burgers have in them. Do you think you could maybe just give us an idea of how unhealthy a typical fast food meal at a McDonald's is compared to, you know, the sort of meal you might make at home?
Well, I think that there are a couple of things that a fast food meal would have that you wouldn't necessarily have at home. One is a lot of added sugar. The soda that usually comes with a fast food meal is basically pure sugar. A second is you don't know what kind of fat is in the products, and so they may have been fried in an oil that is unhealthy. And the other thing that's hard to determine is the portion size. And so you're given often a large portion of food at a fast food restaurant, and that's part of why you just have so many calories. One of the things that was sort of interesting when we looked at kids' meals at places like McDonald's versus places like Friendly's was surprisingly the McDonald's meals ended up looking better simply because their portions were smaller. They were just as unhealthy in terms of chicken nuggets, french fries, and soda, but the actual amount you got was larger at some of those sit-down casual restaurants.
Do you think that our tastes for this food are changing over time? Do you actually see some trends in the things that we just want to feed ourselves or feed our kids?
There have been some promising trends. One thing that I've, felt good about is people are drinking less soda. that the overall consumption of, you know, Coke and Pepsi and those sorts of regular sodas has gone down. Interestingly, diet soda has actually gone down some as well. I think part of it is that there has been a huge amount of media, you know, information out there about how unhealthy these products are for you. And I think some people are starting to think twice before buying them for themselves and their family.
If you have questions about the fast-changing fast food industry, we'd like to hear from you at 860-275-7266. Have you noticed some of your habits changing over the years? You can always email us your thoughts to wherewelive@wnpr.org. Before we get into talking about the so-called fast casual restaurants and the way that we are seemingly gravitating toward things that might seem healthier, I want to talk about some of the competition that, say, McDonald's and Burger King are getting from the same types of burger joints. I mean, Five Guys Burgers and Fries or Shake Shack, there's one downtown in New Haven right now. Basically, near as I can tell, the stuff that they're feeding us isn't any better for you, might in some cases be worse for you, but there seems to be a perception that it might be better, more wholesome, more something than McDonald's. Can you talk this through as somebody who studies this food?
What I think is happening is some of these other restaurants are communicating to the customer that they're higher quality. So the idea of having a hamburger, I think the McDonald's hamburger has come to be thought of as this, you know, frozen thing that has been shipped who knows from where. We know that they're exactly the same all over the country. So it kind of gives this impression to the customer that they're mass produced and, you know, sort of this, I don't know, like this object almost. And so I think that that has hurt McDonald's, whereas I think places like Shake Shack or some of the other more casual fast restaurants give the impression that they're fresher, that maybe they get their food more locally, that they, you know, make things from scratch in the kitchen as opposed to just heating things up that have been sent frozen. I think that's the impression. I'm not sure how much truth there is to all of that, but I think that's definitely the impression the customer has.
I mean, from a pure health standpoint, if you put down Five Guys Burgers and Fries burger and fries and a McDonald's burgers and fries, are you seeing anything specifically different in how good that is for you, or I should say bad that is for you?
Well, if you're just talking about calories, which for the study of obesity is pretty much the most important thing, I don't think that there's going to be a difference. In fact, it's quite possible that the portion size at McDonald's would be smaller depending on what you order. But if you're looking at something that's a little bit more abstract, this idea of quality and freshness, then I think people feel like the Five Guys would be better.
Quality and freshness sort of run hand in hand with the change in offerings that we're seeing. One of the things I find interesting about the about this dichotomy of how fast food is marketed and, frankly, how we buy it is that you'll see on one hand a chain like Subway, the sandwich shop, promoting sandwiches that are much healthier for you. For years, they had this guy, Jared, who lost all this weight eating Subway sandwiches, supposedly. And one of the things they were selling to you is it was fresh, it was made right in front of you, and you could get a lower calorie meal than you might get at the McDonald's next door. But then concurrently, they were running another ad campaign that said for just $5, you can get a different Subway sandwich stacked high with meat and cheese. You know, calories be damned. This is just going to be something that fills you up. It is interesting how they seem to be applying pressure on two different sides of our brain, one that wants to get a great value and one that wants to say, you know what, I need to be a little healthier than just dropping by Mickey D's all the time.
I think you're exactly right. I think Subway is particularly brilliant in this. And my guess is that they figured out a couple of things. First, when someone's deciding where to go eat, they are kind of using this intellectual problem-solving part of their brain, and they may think to themselves, oh, well, I'm going to choose someplace healthier. And so they feel like they'll be able to maximize the customer's choice at that point. But what all of these restaurants know, and I've heard from them over and over again, is that the customers say they want healthy food, but when they actually get into the store, they don't. And so what I think they're banking on is that people will come in with all the intentions of ordering the healthy sub, but then they see, wow, look, $5 foot long, I can get all of this food for $5, and then they'll go ahead and get the less healthy option that they feel in the moment is going to taste better, be more satisfying, and be a better value.
So let me ask you more about this. So essentially, customers are saying, if surveyed, we want more salads, we want more stuff that is going to be a healthier option. But when it comes right down to it, we're finding that they just don't buy that stuff.
That is exactly what I have been told by the industry, that they do focus groups with customers and the customers say, We want veggie burgers or we want more salads. And yet they really don't sell very many of those products. And, you know, if you think about it just in terms of yourself, I think so many people, you know, wake up every Monday morning with the best intentions that they're going to be healthy and that they're going to make healthy choices. But when you're tired and you're hungry, it's a lot harder to make those choices if you have something that's sort of inexpensive and highly palatable right in front of you.
Well, there is sort of a difference in the ways that we go out to eat and the reasons why we go out to eat. Maybe this is one of the things that you're noticing as a trend in fast food is if it's supposed to be about an indulging experience, right? I'm going to go out because I really want a burger. That's a very different part of my brain that I'm using than I've got to grab something fast and I've got to get it in me quickly so I can get back to work or so that I can get the kids someplace. I mean, do you notice some sort of change in behavior in the way people are deciding to buy fast food or deal with, you know, a company like McDonald's? Depending on what they're trying to do, is it an indulgence or is it just something that I'm trying to grab and put in my face fast?
I think that we've seen huge changes over the years in that phenomenon. I think historically, certainly 30, 40 years ago, people went out to eat as a special occasion. And so as a culture, we came to believe that when you go out to eat, it should be something really special, tastes really good. I mean, and you know you're paying for it. But the trends have actually shown that the proportion of the each household's income that they pay on out-of-home food versus in-home food has grown tremendously. So we now are paying significantly more of our money to eat out than to eat in. And so even though we may still be telling ourselves if we're out, it must be a special occasion, the truth is we're out all the time. And I think that's part of the problem. It is, if it were really just a special every now and then thing, it wouldn't have been such a problem. But it's become a very regular thing, especially something like fast food that I think families rely on when they're rushing around and the parents have the kids in the back of the car and they just need to get something in them before they get to their next activity. And we're still thinking it's a special treat, but it's really not. And we need to come up with something that's a healthier alternative.
Industry analysts say that drive-through numbers have started to level off or maybe even decline. You wouldn't know that from the line at the Dunkin' Donuts in my hometown, which backs up out onto the road and, as a matter of fact, actually causes traffic jams. But that does seem to signal some sort of a change, that maybe this move toward a Panera or a Chipotle or someplace where you can sit down and actually feel like you're tasting your food might be a different experience than eating it in your car. Are we seeing trends in that direction?
I do think that you're certainly better off sitting down at a table and eating rather than eating in your car. I don't know what the overall trends have been, but I think that if there's time, I would always recommend that people sit down and eat their meal at a table because it's better in so many ways with your family to really have that time together, to not be rushed, to be able to focus. Being distracted, eating while you're driving, things like that is definitely not a healthy way to go.
We're talking with Marlene Schwartz. She's director of the UConn Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity, and we're talking through the fast-changing world of fast food today. McDonald's is losing market share, and the new CEO is even promising a reset. We'll talk about some of the trends and also whether or not in the policy realm we might think about changing the way we look at fast food. Coming up this afternoon on the Colin McInerney Show at 1 o'clock, we're going to be talking about another part of this industry, the soda industry. If you have thoughts about fast food, 860-275-7266. We'll get to your calls right after this break, Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're talking with Marlene Schwartz. She's the director of the UConn Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity. The Rudd Center had been at Yale University for a number of years. They have a new partnership with the University of Connecticut, and they study the food that we eat and some of the problems that it causes, hopefully getting to some solutions as well. We're tackling the fast-changing world of fast food on the program today, and we'll get to some of your phone calls at 860-275-7266, especially some changes in the way you feel like you're eating. We want to hear from you. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Marlene, before we get to some phone calls, one of the things that we talked about earlier is that fast food restaurants are trying to say we're fresh and we're healthier. You've already suggested that even though people say they want fresh, healthy food, they don't necessarily buy it once they get into the store. But there is seemingly this movement for more and more fast food companies to talk about things like fresh and organic. At the end of the day, is this a good thing? I mean, that we're actually maybe through some of our behaviors, moving the fast food industry toward considering the way they grow the food, the way they package the food, the way they get the food to us?
I think it is a good thing. I think that, you know, fast food is part of a very large system in terms of, you know, growing the food and obtaining the food. And there are lots of issues that influence the quality of that food. And I think the more pressure they feel from consumers to really have higher quality food and to be thoughtful about the conditions under which that food is grown and harvested, I think those are all positive things.
And, I mean, when you study the actual food that we eat, is there any significant difference in the quality, the healthiness of, say, an organic salad that McDonald's might sell versus a conventionally grown lettuce salad? Obviously, people who grow organic food say it's much, much better for you. Once you get to the level of factory-farmed organic food that comes to you through the fast food window, is there much difference?
You know, it's a really interesting question. And I guess my feeling is the best salad is the one that you'll eat. And if it's an organic salad, that's fine. If it's not an organic salad, that's fine, too. I think it's more important that people increase their intake of fruits and vegetables in whatever form. And I'll worry about the organic when we've gotten people's diets a little bit closer to at least having fruits and vegetables on their plates.
Are we eating better as a society right now?
There has been some improvement. I think among children, there has been some improvement in what they're eating in schools, certainly. And there's also some improvement overall. But a disturbing trend is that it seems that the higher income families are the ones that are showing the most improvement. I think it's still quite difficult for low income families to improve the quality of their diets because of their access to food and especially the affordability of it.
Well, and talk a little bit more about that, if you would, because the affordability of food, it's one of the things that's driven this boom in fast food in America. If you can get what seems like it might be a meal for a couple bucks, that is a pretty good bargain for an awful lot of people. I mean, how do we address this problem? Because companies are still making an awful lot of money. Families who need to feed their kids are saying, well, I'd love to feed them something healthier, but this is cheap and it's available. I mean, what do we do from a policy standpoint?
Well, it's a huge problem from a policy standpoint, and I think there are a number of ways to approach it. I mean, one is to really look at the choices people have in the moment where they're choosing between, let's say, an apple and a cookie. And in a perfect world, the apple would be less expensive than the cookie. And I think to the extent that we can create incentives and taxes to restructure the economic food environment, we can definitely help people make healthier choices. The other thing that has to do beyond expense is the time cost. And, you know, there are a lot of fights sometimes at meetings I go to about whether or not it's really more expensive to eat a healthy diet. And you'll have people stand up and talk about how beans are inexpensive and rice is inexpensive. But what I think they're forgetting is that it takes a lot of time to prepare those foods. And so people have recommended things like educating kids and families about ways to really stretch their dollar, ways to get less expensive raw ingredients that they can then turn into meals. But at the end of the day, it still takes a lot of time. And there's nothing faster than getting that dollar meal at McDonald's.
Yeah, so how do we turn that around? Because, I mean, we'll talk about policies and we can talk about taxes and that sort of thing. But until you can solve the problem of getting a healthy meal quickly onto the plate of a family of four when it's so easy to just stop at the drive-thru, I mean, how do we get to that?
Well, I think we need to make it easy for people. I mean, I think there probably are things that retailers can do in the grocery store where they really put together the raw ingredients in an easy way with a recipe and say, here's a quick meal that you can make and this is how much it's going to cost. I think having kids eating healthier food at school and having, you know, home ec or what it used to be called when I was in school, family consumer science, offered in schools where kids can really learn how to cook. I think it's going to take multiple approaches like that to really change the culture. But I think people want to eat better. I think that families want to eat together. I think that parents know that the best thing to do is to prepare meals for their families. So I think giving them the tools and just making sort of taking away the barriers and making it easier is something as a society we need to do from every angle.
So on the flip side, there's this sort of carrot and stick approach. I mean, we want to make it easier. But on the other side, your center has advocated that, you know, tax policy can change behaviors. I mean, where are we with that right now? People make fun of, you know, whether it's Mayor Bloomberg saying you can't have a soda over a certain size, and there are worries about a nanny state getting in, you know, in between me and my fast food burger. But does this stuff actually work? I mean, if you tax fast food a different way, does it change the overall health of our society?
Well, what we know is that people are highly influenced by price. So if one product is more expensive than another and you see them as relatively equivalent, you are going to pick the least expensive product. So, you know, it's interesting. People love the idea of healthy food becoming less expensive. But for some reason, when you talk about unhealthy food becoming more expensive, everybody gets all upset. I'm not sure how you get one without the other. And it's really about the relative cost. So, yeah, our position has always been that if we could tax something like soda, which is essentially completely devoid of nutrition. In fact, so much so that the state of Connecticut charges sales tax on it because it's not even considered a food. If we could take a tax on that and then use that to subsidize these other healthier foods, that would be a win-win. But there's, you know, there's a sort of philosophical barrier that you run up against where people really feel like if you're taxing something, you're somehow taking away their choice or, you know, I can't even explain it. But it's been a very difficult idea to get through.
What would the subsidy look like? I mean, if you take this tax dollars, I mean, look, at the state level, we talk about this all the time, that anytime we tax anything, we'd love for that money to go directly into some sort of a program that would do what we said it was going to do. And then because of our budget crisis, it almost never does. So what's the case you would make for the subsidy, where these dollars would and should go if indeed we taxed fast food differently?
Well, I agree. I think mistrust of government is probably one of the biggest barriers to getting any of these taxes passed. But what I would propose if someone asked me is that you would tax these products and then those would go right into the WIC and the SNAP program. So the Women, Infant, and Children and SNAP, known as food stamps program in the state. Those are run by the state, even though those are federal programs. And there are models out there of giving what they call double bucks coupons, where you give people using food stamps coupons so that they can get twice the amount of money when they're buying fruits and vegetables. You can give extra coupons to women on WIC for fruits and vegetables. You can use those systems that are already built and very concrete and have models in other states, and we could then make it much easier for our low-income residents to be able to afford to feed these healthier foods to their families.
So by essentially saying we're going to make it easier for you, much easier for you, and much more profitable for you to spend money on healthy food with WIC, you will change the behavior in that way, as opposed to just doing the same thing at the grocery store you were doing at McDonald's, which is buying as much of the cheap stuff as possible.
Exactly. I think that's right. And so you need to set up the system a little differently. And I think that, you know, if you could pair the sort of incentive program, which tend to be pretty popular, like giving extra coupons for fruits and vegetables or to be used at farmers markets and things like that, with something that people feel is more punitive, like a tax, then I think people can kind of balance the two and see that you have to pay for the program somewhere. And why not pay for it with a tax on a product that we want to decrease consumption of?
We're talking with Marlene Schwartz, who's director of the UConn Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity. We're talking about some of the changes in the way we eat, specifically the fast food industry. We'll be talking in a moment about the way the fast food industry markets to kids. But as we talk now about trying to get healthier foods in front of everyone, you can call us at 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. And we'll hear from some of your calls in just a moment. It's getting to that time of the year when farmers market season is here. And you talked about that as well. This has been a big push on in the state, where you're opening up farmers markets to people of all income levels, because if there's a stigma about McDonald's food being bad for you, there's also a stigma on the other side about farmers markets being sort of elitist and very expensive. Mm-hmm. And if you can change that perception, I think it might change a lot of the way people shop there and eat, right?
I completely agree. I think that's one of the things that Connecticut has done such a terrific job with over the years, is opening farmers markets. And as a state, there have been many initiatives to make sure that WIC and SNAP is, you know, you can use it at farmers markets. And they serve so many functions. I mean, I think they help people learn about their food, where their food comes from. You get to meet the farmer. But it also, you know, to make it affordable for lots of different people is sort of the best case scenario. It's a real win-win.
And subsidizing farmers markets mean that people have a little bit better understanding of where their food comes from. It seems like that's another part of our disconnect, right? If you feel like the food comes from some faraway place, maybe even another country, pre-frozen and then fed out to us in the same way in Hartford that it is halfway across the world, you don't really understand anything about where that food comes from. Whereas if you actually get to meet the people who are growing your food, I don't know, does it put you a little bit closer to it, make a connection?
I think it does. And, you know, one of the ideas that's been out there for a number of years is school gardens. And I think the idea behind a school garden isn't that they're going to grow so much vegetables to really feed the school, but that you're really teaching kids about gardening and about food. And fruits and vegetables are, you know, it's interesting. We talk about them as a category like it's one product. But the truth is there's a wide variability in the how good a fruit or vegetable tastes. And a lot of the taste really has to do with its freshness and its quality. And I think that when you go someplace like a farmer's market and you see the person who's been growing the vegetables, I think it is going to give the child in particularly a much better experience where they probably will be more likely to eat that vegetable. Whereas if you just sort of plunk it on their plate and they have no idea where it came from, they might say no.
Of course, there's also the thing, I'm reading a book right now called The Third Plate that has to deal with growing organics in very specific ways and the ways in which that food just tastes so much better, you can't even put it into words. I mean, if you really get a great carrot at a farmer's market, you'd almost like to see them be able to put a, I don't know, a McDonald's salad carrot next to it just to give you a little taste test so you understand the real difference between what you're spending that extra dollar for.
I think that's a great idea. I would love to see taste tests like that. I think that, you know, people also really have a hard time with the idea of focusing on quality instead of quantity. And I think that, you know, part of it is that as an entire society, the proportion of our incomes we've spent on food has progressively gone down over time. So interestingly, even though people complain and sort of feel like food is expensive, we actually spend less on food in the United States as a proportion of our income than any place else in the entire world. And so you could argue that we need to re-educate ourselves about the importance of food and the importance of spending money on food and to really take into account the investment that you're making in your future health, which will, of course, then pay off financially.
Let's go to Kathleen, who's calling from Cheshire. If you want to join us at 860-275-7266 as we talk about food and food policy, specifically fast food. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Hi to your guest.
Hi. What's up?
I'm calling because what I would like to see is, and I know that this is not accessible to a lot of people, but people who invest in mutual funds and look at the companies that those mutual funds invest in should consider whether or not they want to pressure their mutual fund advisors and managers to divest themselves of stock in companies like McDonald's, Burger King, and Wendy's until those companies actually start putting healthy options on their menus. I happen to be, I've been vegetarian for 14 years, I've been vegan for 3, and my health benefits are incredible.
And Kathleen, I'm going to let you go because I think that this idea of consumers and shareholders putting pressure on companies like McDonald's is a very good idea that I know clearly your dog agrees with. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that. Marlena, thought?
I think that's a great idea. And I believe there has been some effort in that, you know, sort of with that strategy to sort of, you know, follow the money. And there are advocacy groups that have really taken that approach to try to go to shareholder meetings and become shareholders and stand up and, you know, make those demands. There's also an organization that is made up of religious leaders, interestingly, that has taken a similar approach and where they'll send a nun to the shareholder meeting to stand up and talk about the importance of, you know, child labor and things like that. And I think those can be very compelling. And I think that that's absolutely the right way to think about it.
I think Kathleen should send her dog. if you want to join us, 860-275-7266. When we come back, we're going to talk with James Sargent. He's been studying how fast food companies market to kids, talk more about the food that our kids eat, how we can get them eating healthier sooner. Join us at 860-275-7266. And this is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on tomorrow's program, the constant and very high levels of stress associated with extreme poverty can have a toxic effect on children. We'll profile a local program that's trying to reverse some of these trends. We'll also sit down and visit with 2-time Pulitzer Prize winner David McCullough. He'll talk with us about history writing and about the Wright brothers in advance of his appearance at the Connecticut Forum this Saturday. That's tomorrow's Where We Live. Hope you can join us. Today we're talking about food and food policy with Marlene Schwartz, director of the Yukon Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity. If you want to join us, 860-275-7266. Also joining us on the line is James Sargent. Jim is Scott M. and Lisa G. Stewart Professor of Pediatric Oncology in the Department of Pediatrics at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center. And Jim Sargent, welcome to Where We Live. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
First of all, I'll ask you, and I'd like Marlene to jump on this as well. You've studied the ways in which the fast food industry has tried to, well, get at kids, to try to get them to eat. I mean, first of all, a broad overview, what is it that McDonald's, Burger King, and some of the other fast food giants are trying to do to get kids to eat their food?
Well, so just a clarification, what we studied was television advertising that goes directly to children on channels like Nickelodeon and Cartoon Network. And the second clarification is that if you look at the top, like, 20 fast food companies, the ones with the most revenue, at the top of the list is McDonald's and Burger King, and those are the only two companies that, when we did the study in 1910, or 2010, they were the only two studies that were marketing directly to children on these network channels. So, it's not Wendy's, it's not Subway, it's not, you know, a lot of these other fast food companies that you've been talking about. It was mainly at that time McDonald's and Burger King, and since then, Burger King has quit doing it. So it's really only McDonald's that is doing this. So what are they doing? Well, they create commercials that really emphasize the toy premiums that they give out at the restaurants, get the kids excited about the premium so they'll nag their parents to take them to the restaurant. So they emphasize the fun. They show kids what the restaurant looks like from the street view so that they know when they pass the restaurant in the car. They just do everything they can to get the kids to bother their parents into dragging them to the restaurant.
Why is it that McDonald's is the only one left standing? It seems as though it works for them. Why aren't other companies continuing to market to kids in this way?
I don't have a good answer for that. I don't have a good answer for why Burger King got out. I would hope that what the board of directors and the CEO of Burger King decided was that it wasn't ethical. I mean, what they're doing is they're actually hiring, you know, marketing companies to sell to kids that don't even know they're being sold to. I mean, these kids are 4, 5 years old. They don't even really reliably distinguish the commercial TV message from the entertainment message.
Here's what a typical McDonald's kids ad might actually sound like. Let's listen.
Minion, something in there seems to be causing fun.
It's the power of the red box, sir.
I must have it!
Activate disguise generator.
Oh, man. Oh.
Perfect. Wait for mother, sir.
Whether you're a hero or not, you can get wickedly tasty food.
Delicious.
And a super toy from the new DreamWorks movie,
Rats.
Megamind. There's one in your McDonald's Happy Meal.
What? Mega villains aren't allowed to have fun, too?
Yeah, so that's McDonald's targeting directly kids. I mean, guess one thing, Jim, I'd say is, yes, McDonald's may be the only fast food company that's doing that, but if you look at children's television, everything from toys to Lucky Charms, I mean, it's not like McDonald's is the only one trying to get directly at kids and serve them sugary or otherwise unhealthy stuff by, you know, targeting commercials right at them, right?
Well, I think you're right. We can address that in a minute. But I think the point to be made is that McDonald's adheres to self-regulation practices through the Children's Advertising Review Unit. That's a self-regulatory agency that explicitly addresses deception. And what they say in their guidelines is that since children have difficulty distinguishing product from premium, advertising that contains a premium message, and that's the toy, should focus the child's attention primarily on the product and make the premium message clearly secondary. So so according to their own self-regulation guidelines, the marketing is deceptive. They're practicing deceptive marketing, you know, they're engaging in deceptive marketing practices.
Hey, Marlene, can you flesh out this idea of self-regulation a little bit? Because this is always one of the tricky things. Whenever an industry self-regulates, there's always, well, seemingly a cause for problems.
Right. And there's actually another self-regulation effort among the advertisers of food. It's the CFBAI, Children's Food and Beverage Advertising Initiative. And that is where a lot of food companies have come together and basically said that if they are going to market to children under 12, that they will only market products that meet certain nutrition standards. And on the surface, it sounds like a really terrific idea. But there are a couple of things to keep in mind as to why this isn't getting as much done as we would hope. One is that they set their own nutrition standards, which may not be quite as strong as we would like. But the second issue is the way they define marketing. So they only include advertising that they purchase on television programs where 30% or more of the audience is made up of children under the age of 11. And in fact, there are not that many programs like that. And what we know in studying the viewing habits of young children is they actually see quite a lot of television that's targeted to the age group right above them. So your children under 11 or 11 and under are still seeing a lot of shows that are maybe are targeted to 12, 13, 14-year-olds. And so just taking the ads off of that very specific narrow group of television shows is not going to protect kids from exposure to a significant amount of marketing.
So James Sargent, if this premium driven advertising is so effective at getting kids to nag their parents to go get McDonald's, it seems as though, you know, it might work to get kids to eat healthier food. I mean, if McDonald's offered something that was quite a bit healthier than the normal Happy Meal, but it came with a little thing from the latest movie, might that be seen as a good thing?
Yeah, it would be, except McDonald's doesn't want anything to do with it. The city of San Francisco passed some regulations that they could only get the toy if they ordered a healthy alternative Happy Meal. And McDonald's basically responded to that by giving the toy away to the to all comers for 5 cents. So they effectively bypassed what was a city ordinance that was trying to get kids to eat more healthy. I think the bigger question is that we have to ask in our society is why is it okay for large food corporations to market energy dense foods to children in the midst of an obesity epidemic? It just seems crazy to me.
I want to get to the phones, 860-275-7266. B is calling from Norwich. Hi there, B.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I'm wondering if there has been in the studies any idea of who it is who eats at fast food places, the places that we're proposing to tax more heavily. My idea, just from my own experience, is most of the people who patronize fast food restaurants are lower income people who see that as a major part of their food intake. And I'm wondering, would not increasing or putting on a special tax for that kind of food disproportionately affect lower-income people? For an example, you go to Kentucky Fried Chicken, you get one of their meals. You can eat that all yourself, or it's enough food that you can split that meal and feed two people. Chinese restaurants, I see people coming in ordering just an appetizer, and that's going to feed who knows how many people. You know, you get 6 pieces of steak on a stick. That's really 2 meals.
Mm. Well, B, let me put the question to Marlene, and thank you so much for that. Essentially, what B is asking is, are we disproportionately hurting lower-income people by that? Do the numbers actually prove that out, Marlene?
Well, I think that it is probably true that at some of the restaurants we're talking about, like McDonald's, there is going to be a larger proportion of low-income people who eat there compared to other more expensive restaurants. But the idea is not to make the food there more expensive. The idea is actually to change the choices so that, for example, one of the things McDonald's did that they do deserve credit for is they changed the default side dish that came with their Happy Meals. It used to be that it always came with French fries and soda. And several years ago, they actually made a change so that instead of getting French fries, you get half apples and half French fries. Now, of course, I was shooting for all apples, but it was a compromise. They've also changed it so that instead of it coming automatically with soda, it now comes with either water, juice, or milk. So you're not changing the prices, but you are changing what we call the default. Because typically, when people go to order something, if your meal comes with a beverage and a side, you usually take whatever it is that they tell you it comes with. And so if we can get restaurants where we know that some more vulnerable parts of our population are eating, and we can really pressure them to make sure that they're giving more fruits and vegetables and they're providing more low-fat milk and water and things like that, I think that we actually can help improve diets of people where the kids are the most vulnerable.
We're talking with Marlene Schwartz from the UConn Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity and James Sargent, who is in the Pediatric Oncology Department of Pediatrics at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center. They've both been studying food policy specifically as it pertains to kids and fast food. I want to get to Kay in stores. Hi, Kay.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, there's a thing about McDonald's that's been driving me crazy forever because, you know, everybody makes out like everything has to change at one time at any of the fast food restaurants. And just this morning, I bought whole wheat fiber-filled English muffins for the same price as regular English muffins. And if I can do that, I'm sure McDonald's can get it a whole lot cheaper.
Sure.
You know, and if they start out, you know, it's like with anything, trying to change people's diets. And I worked with my husband forever just to get him to eat broccoli. But you have to do it a little bit at a time. You can't just all of a sudden say, okay, you've got to eat healthy. This is what you do.
Well, hey, thanks very much for that, Kay. And I think that that is really changing. I mean, you were not joking before, but you were saying, Marlene, you know, if it was up to you, the side dish in the McDonald's Happy Meal would be all apples and not French fries. But the fact of the matter is it's McDonald's. Kids are probably going to want French fries. We're not going to end up with all apples. She makes the point of a little bit here and there. Maybe all of a sudden the burger patty becomes a little less fatty and a little bit fresher. All of a sudden there's a little bit more vegetables in it and there's a little fewer fried foods. I mean, do you think that that's a trend that all of these things that we're talking about, whether it's fast casual restaurants doing more eating healthy and organic foods in our mainstream diet, do you think that this is prompting a slow, steady change at places like McDonald's?
I do. I think that you're exactly right. I think that it is definitely a better strategy to make changes incrementally and sort of, you know, get people used to them before you make the next change. And one place where we have seen that is in sugared cereals marketed to kids, that a number of years ago when we first started looking at that product line, we found that a lot of them had 13, 14 grams of sugar per serving. And a number of years ago, the major cereal companies pledged that they were actually going to decrease the number of grams of sugar per serving to under 10. And we have seen them do that. And so, you know, while 6 grams per serving is kind of the gold standard, that's what the WIC program recommends, at least we're now seeing 9, 8 grams per serving. So absolutely, I think that, you know, sodium is another perfect example of where the food industry has said, we can't do this all at once. We have to slowly, incrementally decrease the amount of sodium in our products. And I think that makes a lot of sense. I think our role at the Rudd Center is to be the one that sort of stands up and yells and says, we need change, we need change. But I completely agree that when the change occurs, it's perfectly fine with me if it's slow and steady progress.
Lucy's in Bloomfield. Hi, Lucy. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Lucy Nolan from End Hunger, Connecticut.
Oh, hi, Lucy.
Hi. Hi, Marlene.
Hi, Lucy.
I just wanted to talk about, we were talking about marketing, and we didn't talk about marketing in schools. And there was legislation this year to stop some marketing of foods that weren't allowed in the school diet from, you know, school meals. But we went and we saw some, there are pictures of McDonald's plaques in gyms, you know, giving awards to sports. There's reading programs that's sponsored by Pizza Hut. All these things create this in a safe space, which is our schools, you know, that these foods are okay. And so I think we really need to look at that, and parents need to be aware of what's going on in the schools too.
Oh, Lucy, thanks for that. And James Sargent, I mean, there's something that seems a little bit softer than those direct sell ads that we heard before, but to parents, they're probably seeing it in just the same way. If McDonald's, Pizza Hut, and everyone else is in our schools all the time, that's directly trying to get at kids, right?
I just think it's another example of how the food industry is inadequately regulated. I mean, another McDonald's program is that they incentivize the coaches to bring the team, you know, the sports team to McDonald's after a game. And I just think that those kinds of those kinds of marketing strategies. They're marketing strategies that really try to undermine or that in effect undermine parental control over what their kids eat, and that should just be something that's not allowed.
Do you have some more thoughts on what Lucy said?
Absolutely. I completely agree. I think that a lot of parents probably aren't even aware of the amount of marketing that exists in the schools, and I would strongly encourage parents to go to your child's school and look around specifically for that. But one of the serious problems of the program I mentioned before, the CFBAI, is it doesn't include marketing in schools as one of the places where they'll self-regulate. And so that is why we need things like state legislation to address that issue. And I think it's incredibly important that we not let these companies use our schools where our kids are a captive audience as a way to push their brands on them.
I want to get to Darlene from Watertown. Hi, Darlene. Go ahead.
Hi. I was pleased to see this topic. I specifically want to talk about, obviously, McDonald's and the fast food places don't buy from family farms. Usually, I would imagine, I could be wrong about that, but my concern is the rise of GMO foods in the big agriculture industry in this country, and the fact that there still is no GMO labeling on our products. So even if we are eating fruits and vegetables, we're eating them laden with chemicals and not even genetically a strawberry that has a salmon gene in it, and...
Well, because we're running low on time, I want to put this to Marlene. How does the Rudd Center address this question of genetically modified food? There was, of course, a law passed in Connecticut about labeling, but it's not going to go into effect until other states actually adopt a similar law, so you don't see GMO labeling. There's a lot of controversy over whether any of the GMOs that we're talking about are good for you, bad for you, what you know about them. It does speak to this idea, Marlene, that typically genetically modified foods do come from big corporations from far away. I mean, where does the Rudd Center fall on this particular issue? Because it is a very controversial one right now.
That's right. The GMO issue is very controversial and unfortunately is not really our area of expertise. So I've been asked about this a lot. We don't have a position on GMOs. I would really need to learn more about it. In general, when it comes to labeling, we are very much in favor of calorie labeling. We believe people are entitled to know what's in their food. So the labeling idea, I can certainly see the benefit of it. But I guess I just go back to what I said before, that I feel like we need to take things one step at a time. And for me, the first step is really getting people to eat more of the healthier products. And whether they're genetically modified or not is not as much a concern for me personally.
What you're essentially saying is whatever it's going to take to get people to eat more of the healthier foods, that is something that's going to show up overall in a healthier society.
Right. I mean, increasing fruit and vegetable consumption has been shown, for decades to be a very positive thing for human health. And it protects you from a number of diseases. And there's just so many reasons to focus on that I think to get distracted by a lot of these other issues, I wouldn't want that to take away from the chances that people would increase their consumption of fruits and vegetables.
We talked very briefly about schools, and we just have 30 seconds left, but are children in schools being taught the right thing? I remember a food pyramid that I was supposed to learn about, and I know the food pyramid changes like 12 times a year as far as what the pyramid looks like. I mean, are we being taught the right things at an early age about what we should eat a lot of and what we should eat a little bit of?
So the pyramid changes every 5 years and is not a pyramid anymore.
Whatever. I don't even know what it looks like.
It may feel like 12 times a year. And it's currently a plate. It's my plate is the official government symbol. And essentially, it's a picture of a plate and half of the plate is fruits and vegetables. And then you have whole grains, you have, lean protein, and you have low fat dairy. And so that's what kids are being taught. And I think one place that we should be really proud, and especially here in Connecticut, because we've been ahead of the country on this for many years, is in what we are serving our kids in schools. So there have been a lot of improvements to the quality of the school lunch, and kids are learning in the cafeteria how to eat.
And we'll have to have you back for another conversation about how school lunches are changing. Marlene Schwartz from the Rudd Center at UConn, thank you so much.
Thank
you. I also want to thank James Sargent from Dartmouth. This is Where We Live.